Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 2, delivered on August 23, 2018. The title of this lecture is Finance Concepts.
The markets have just opened, but what you're seeing here is a crystal ball. The crystal ball is the futures market that is active overnight. It's a way of seeing where the traders are positioning themselves for the opening bell. And right now the opening bell has already occurred, but there's a delay in the feed that is on most websites of about 15 minutes. So what you're seeing is the market's last assessment before the bell in the futures trading market. It's an overnight market, and it gives you an idea of what's going to happen at the opening. And in this case, what would you say is about to happen? Here, have a look. Are these up or down numbers? Two are up, one is down. Is this significant, or is this pretty much almost meaningless? Yeah, don't be afraid. If you're wrong, I'll just say, oh, God, that was a stupid... Yeah, these are tiny movements. You look at percentages. Again, do not look at absolute numbers. The percentages are just minimal. The market is drifting in the overnight. There's no big information that's scaring the markets or exciting the markets right now. This was a quiet overnight period, and so there's no information that is pushing the bulls or the bears to get worried about what's going to come in this market right now. Although we can say that the very fact that it is a quiet market is information in and of itself. There has been a problem with the markets being very quiet over the past few months, as I had mentioned before. And you can see that in something like the ETF for the Standard & Poor's 500. Well, I can't see what happened yesterday. They're already showing the opening market. So there you go. But if you were to look over the year to date, you can see that there have been a few volume spikes. But in general, it's been a very quiet market, rising for the time being. But that's going to change. There's very little doubt that we're in for a very strong market correction. And that's a term we use for a crash. The market has a strong market correction. In other words, there's going to be a very big, steep fall in the markets sometime before the end of the year, probably. And all the praise of how great the market has been, as you can see, over the past 5 years. You can see that this is not a rally that has started very recently. This has been going on for a long while. We've had a long run of the stock markets, all of the markets, upward, and it's about time for the correction to happen. And we're getting to that point right now. But as you can see, there is no reason to believe that anything in the last year or 2 years was significant. This has been a long bull run. And the bulls are getting tired, and you can see that in the low volume numbers. As you can see the volume has been tailing downward for the past probably almost a year now. The volume has been slowly easing back. This is the analytics that I expect you to be able to do yourselves over the next few months, is to start to look at the markets as professionals in whatever part of business you're in, and also in your personal lives, to be able to make intelligent investment decisions, whether you make them on your own or with the help of brokers or financial planners. Very quickly, a couple of stocks just to begin this day. If we were to look at some security. Tell me a company you like. What would be a company that would be of interest to you? You got nothing?
Apple.
Really? You know? Apple. Okay. A PPL. Apple. Okay. Let's go and see how much you remember from our first day together. What are you going to pay for a round lot? About, approximately. What are you going to pay?
$214.98.
Well, it'll be around, no, not for a round lot. A round lot is 100 shares. Excuse me. A round lot is around 100 shares. It'd be about $215 to start off, right off the bat. You'd say about $215 per share times 100. So you're going to have to cough up $21,505 plus your commission just to get started. But you are correct that you will buy that at $214.98 and you would sell it at $214.95. So the bid-ask spread is 3 pennies, 3 cents. So you would really pay about $221,498, about four, plus your broker's commission. And so you're in the hole to start with because you paid the bid and you would sell at the ask. And the next thing is that you're in the hole because you paid a commission. So you need that stock price to jump a little bit before you could be very happy with what you've done. Now, moving to something a little bit more, shall we say, more exciting, Target. Nope, I don't want to do Target. Let's try something else here. I'm drawing a blank. Ah, Kellogg. Really? These stocks suck. Okay. Well, I'll go with this one just to start off with, just for some basic information. First of all, the market's assessment of the total value of the ownership of this company. What is the market's assessment of the total value of the ownership of this company, ma'am? You got nothing? Anyone remember what I told you? What is 009 billion. Yes, that is the price per share times the number of shares outstanding. Price per share times the number of shares outstanding. That is the market's assessment of the total value of the ownership of this corporation. That's not the total enterprise value. The total enterprise value is the market value of the owner's equity plus the market value of the debt. We'll get to that in a little while here, but very quickly, just to have a look, I'm going to go to the Securities and Exchange Commission very quickly, and I'm going to have a look. Kellogg, really? Search company filings, K. I didn't do that right, so K. And the more I do this, the more you're going to get used to it and be able to do it yourself. Now, Kellogg filed its annual a while back, but we'll use that one. And we're going to look at the financial statements and the consolidated balance sheet. The accountants say that the total value of the equity is $2.228 billion. The market says that the total value of the equity is $25 billion. See the slight little tiny bit of difference between a finance and accounting here? I mean, it's not much. The market values this company at more than 10 times what the accountants value the company at. Now, if you're going to buy and sell stock, you're going to say, well, okay, which is it that the market is going to consider the correct answer? Hello, Mr. Broker. The accountants say that I should pay, in this case, it would be about $7.20. No. Yeah, it'd be about $7.21 per share. The market says it's $72.14. Which one do you suppose you're going to be charged when you buy the stock of this company? Do you have an idea which one? Is it going to be the market's decision or the accountant's decision? Yeah, absolutely. The accountants mean nothing here. You are going to live in the world of the markets themselves. You're going to live in this world where the markets say this is what the value is. The accounting information for what it's worth does not have anything to do with the trading in the real live fire exercise of investments. And it also in corporate decision making. We still have some people who think that those accounting statements are how you look at corporate decisions. You look at it from the accounting. But more and more, we're finally getting around to teaching enough of you business people that the accounting numbers don't tell us what the market wants us to hear. The market's signaling this company. Okay, now, try a couple of things. This was the volume yesterday. Those are the volume. I got to remember to tell you something about volume. Was yesterday a strong day or a weak day as far as volume relative to the 52-week average volume in trading? No, it was an extremely weak day. Look, yesterday the market traded 1.2 million shares. The average over the last 52 weeks was 2.4 million shares. In other words, a very slow day. That same creepy thing we're seeing in so many stocks. The 52-week volume is excessively larger than what's been happening day to day over the past couple of months. That's that creepy silence, that scary silence that is troubling we who are the analysts of the market. Now, another thing I should mention here. These numbers for volume are what are called OBV, on-balance volume, on-balance volume. Here's how orders work. The brokers get orders from people. Hello, I would like to buy Kellogg, one round lot Kellogg at market, in other words, whatever the market's price is. And I'm going to say, I would like to buy Kellogg, let's say 10,000 shares, and I want you to buy it at $72.25 or better. Now, in other words, the broker will execute your trade if the broker can get $72.25 or lower per share. That's $72.25 or better on a buy. And okay, so what that does is that goes into a limit order book. And every transaction that every broker gets goes into the limit order book. You add up those. And there is your volume for the day. You add up the last 365 days of those numbers, and that's your average volume that you see there. So this limit order book is literally the books of hundreds of thousands of brokers recording the orders that come in for buys and sells. The problem is that this isn't the whole story. This is the on-balance volume. In other words, the balance of you see in the limit order book. But there's another market that has emerged. It's actually been there for a very long time, but it's become more and more significant over the past few years. It's the dark market. The dark market is orders that do not show up on the limit order books. They are traded by powerful institutions, interests, families, trusts, governments, corporations. And these occur in what we call the dark markets, and they are essentially invisible to us. And so whatever's happening in those markets, we don't see. Eventually, it bubbles up to the surface. Somehow, oh, my God, this huge volume, what the heck was that? Oh, that was something coming out of the dark markets into the light so that it could trade out from an initial position. A little bit exciting when you see something like that. But these dark markets are beginning to show more strength. And we just can't see it. We're blind to them. It's encrypted. It's all secret. And so we can't really say what's going on. Although right now, from what I understand, and I could be absolutely wrong from the information I'm hearing, is that there is significant dark market activity in securities, and it's a lot of it is taking positions that are sells on riskier stocks and buys on safer stocks and on bonds. Bonds are safer than stocks, and so you will see as market participants bail out of the stock market, they sell their stock, the money that they get, they use to buy bonds. Bonds represent a safer investment than stocks do. For one thing, because bondholders have to be paid before stockholders are. For another thing, bonds have an anchor point. There's a money amount that you are paid at the end of a bond's life. Stock market doesn't have anything like that. The process of moving from riskier investments to safer investments is called flight to quality. Flight to quality. And of course, I don't have a dry erase marker. They always seem to swipe them. I put them here yesterday. Just irritates, anyway. Flight to quality. From stocks to bonds, from bonds to metal, and from metal to bullets. Let's hope we stay at metals. It's an old rule. Flight to quality. If you see stock prices going down and bond prices going up, that's a movement of the market called flight to quality. If you see both stocks and bonds going down, but metals like gold, silver, platinum, those kinds of things moving upward, then you're probably in a serious flight to quality that gets scary. After that, it's just anyone's guess when it gets to the point where it's that bad. Like, for example, in Venezuela right now, the economy is just going to hell. And stock market, everyone's bailed from the stock markets. No one's going to buy bonds. And metals are getting very popular. And in the underground, there is a lot of purchase of weaponry for what is expected to be social revolution over the next year. Anyway, now, the next thing is this a safe stock or a risky stock? Talk to me, sir. Is this a safe stock or a risky stock? Don't say I would say. It's right there looking at you. It is a very safe stock. See that beta? Beta measures is our measure of risk. It is our measure of risk. The total risk of a security means nothing to us. All that matters to us is the part of risk that we cannot eliminate through portfolio diversification. Beta of zero means that the security is riskless. Beta of zero means that the security is completely riskless. A beta of one means that the security in a well-diversified portfolio has exactly the volatility of the world market. A beta of one means that the security in a well-diversified portfolio has exactly the volatility of the world market. So one is like the fulcrum. Below one, you are essentially defensive, what we call defensive. That's a defensive stock right there. Kellogg is a defensive stock. It's something that you would buy. You would pull out of higher risk stocks. And this, if you wanted to stay in equities, you would pull towards stocks like this. Kellogg is a very low risk investment. 0.29, that means it has 29% of the volatility of the market. As long as you have it in a well-diversified portfolio. Now, why is that? Why is Kroger, talk to me, why would Kellogg have such a low beta? You got any idea? Okay, do you eat?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a big foodie. I love food. I make food. You'll see me post on Twitter my red velvet cheesecake. It is to die for. I mean, it will make you fat. I actually calculated the calories in one of my triple layer one of those. It was over for the whole thing. It was like 12,000 calories. Needless to say, it's not Jenny Craig. Where were we? Please, focus on this. We'll talk about food later. Okay. Do you eat, right? Okay, now, do you understand now why Kroger, Kellogg is a low-risk stock? It's a necessity. If there is a recession, you are still going to buy cereal. If I didn't, I found out, if I didn't buy cereal, my children plotted to murder me. It's one of those low-risk things. You buy the basics of life there. So even in bad times, their revenues are probably going to stay quite stable, as opposed to companies that offer discretionary things. We find out that in good times, people say, I need this, I need that. Well, we find out in bad times, and they find out they really didn't need all those things. But they do have some things that they really need. Now, just as out of curiosity, would you imagine that Walmart would have a high or a low beta? Tell me, talk to me. Low beta, WMT. Well, spank me, Jesus. See the beta? Sure enough, it's a low-risk stock. Well, let's look at something like Microsoft, the Eye of Sauron. Uh-oh. See, it's not a necessity. You can live without Microsoft. Apple. Yeah. Notwithstanding the Mackies who think they can't live their lives without their stupid iPhones. Excuse me. It's not a discretionary purchase. It's a discretionary. They sell what people do not need. And the whole purpose of the marketing is to make people believe that a want is a need. You don't have to do that when you're Kellogg. They market, they don't have to say, you need this. We do need that. But when you're Apple, you have to create the need instead of the want. You see how the betas actually make sense in a logical way, and that's what I expect out of you. Numbers are great, we have to do it, but at the end of the day, you have to be able to tell me the logic, the common sense behind all of this math. So now, and of course, the market cap of Apple, it's the first company to cross a market cap of $1 trillion. The first company in history to cross that market cap. And there are a couple that are coming up fast. Google is coming up fast. Actually, Google changed its name. It's technically Alphabet Corporation now. But Google is running up there. Amazon is. We're talking about insanely huge companies. You, sir, and I don't mean this in a personal sense, but you, like everyone in this class, including me, we are worthless. I know that Barney said you're special just the way you are, but when you think about it, Barney was a dinosaur. They went extinct. Barney is now an oil change and lube job at Jiffy Lube on the south side of Toledo. The value of a person like one of you, you're going to actually make more, well, some of you are going to make more than the average in your lives. And so if we were to take a net present value of your future expected cash flows, we'd probably be talking about, if you wanted to get life insurance right now that would cover the loss of you, $10 million. Now, $10 million compared to $1.037 trillion. Yeah, worthless, we are. That's it. And we become less and less worthwhile. I am worth an a lot less than you are, because I'm going to die soon. It bothers me. I mean, I walked out past these big pane glass windows, and the angel of death is following me. You know, I turn around, and he just walks like, I'm just walking around. just irritates the hell out of me. Okay, now, a couple of other things. P.E. ratios. And I caution you that the early chapters of this book are written by someone who really doesn't understand markets very well. Higher P.E. ratios are not good. They represent risk. Now, the beta is our fundamental measure of risk. But P.E. ratio is a secondary measure. And in this case, this is actually a fairly low P.E. ratio considering the beta. And if you've got to make a choice, beta rules. But the price-earnings ratio is essentially how much investors are willing to pay in dollars to claim $1 of current earnings. How much investors are willing to pay right now to claim $1 of current earnings. To claim $1 of current earnings. So in other words, the higher that number is, the more money you investors are willing to put down just for a single dollar today that belongs to the shareholders. In this case, the market is saying that every dollar that Apple has made that belongs to the shareholders, Apple will turn into $19.45 for the shareholders from here on out. So in other words, this dollar made it through all the bills. It made it through wholesale costs, operating costs, interest expense, taxes. It belongs to the shareholders, this dollar. The market is saying that that $1 that Apple has right now, it will turn, for you, it will turn into almost $20. Now, you can see how when you talk about some stocks, let me show you this one. This one is, the pivot is about 30 for risk. I mean, every analyst has his or her own. Mine is about 30. I say risky above 30. Now, if I were teaching you what 30 years ago when I was teaching this, I would have said 10. But I've gotten immune to how high these price earnings ratios can go. There was a company in Japan that had a price-earnings ratio of 200,000. In other words, the company, every dollar the company made, the market was thinking that it would turn into $200,000 for its investors. And no, that company just essentially evaporated. But let's look at some normal, a little bit more normal. NFLX. Let's Netflix and chill. Whoa! That P.E. ratio is nosebleed territory. The market right now thinks that every dollar that Netflix earned for its shareholders, Netflix will turn into $158 over the rest of Netflix's life. That's what it thinks. That's what the market's saying right now. Now, in other words, you plunk down money for this stock, that price is very high. It will probably correct. In matter of fact, this summer I brought up Netflix several times. It's actually an interesting company, I'll bring it up with you. If I remember right, at one point that price earnings ratio got to 246. I mean, and now it's beginning to fall back down again, simply because Netflix is a scary company. Netflix is a scary company because it's got all kinds of possibilities, but it's taking all kinds of really unusual risks. And I'll show you those in just a little while. But as you can see, this is actually, let me go for the one day. See how the market, okay, now. This is the beginning. The bell has just rung, okay? Ding. Tell me what's happening. Look at that chart. Tell me what's happening. No, don't worry about that. I want you to look at the chart. Look at the chart.
There's not much on that chart.
Yes, there is. There is something very important. Talk to me. You, go on.
Ad grows a little bit.
Well, rose a little bit. Okay, who's in charge this morning? The bulls or the bears? The bulls are, they, you open the gates, the bell rang, and the bulls came out. And they roared up. Volume is strong. See those spikes on the volume bars? Those are strong spikes. And that's buy. That's buying pressure, pushing the stock price upward. Now, obviously, we don't know what's going to happen for the rest of the day. But right off the bat, the bulls have grabbed this stock and they are buying it strongly. See that mark? See the percentage price increase? 0.88%. That's significant. So this is a strong up day right off the bat. Probably there was some news overnight that got the bulls all kinds of excited. And they were waiting for that opening bell to buy in on the good news. What it was, I couldn't tell you right now because I wasn't following it overnight. But something has clearly got those bulls excited. Let me ask you this. You ever lived in the country or in a small town, neighborhood? Well, you see, there's this thing at night that's kind of annoying. A dog barking. Roar, 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 roar. And inevitably, there's some guy, middle-aged, opens his upstairs window and yells, "What the hell are you barking at down there, dog?" Now, does he really expect that dog? "I don't know, I thought I heard something out there. Y'all go back to sleep, I'll see what it is." No, he's just asking. But the dog is barking for a reason. Dogs have a reason to bark. Might be just because he's a dog, might be an intruder, a rabbit. It might be an alien spaceship. You don't know, but the dog has a reason. So if the market is going up, there's a reason for it. That's a dog barking. And so you can't say, well, nothing happened. Something happened. You would not have traders buying in on zero information. Markets live purely by the information that is happening right now. So in this case, Netflix. Now I'm going to have to use another company to do this. You know what? I need a marker. You give me 1 minute. I got to find a... Someone keeps swiping these. Someday I'm going to electrify that thing right there. Give me a second. I'm walking down the hall here. It's dead silent, dead silent, dead silent, dead silent. We got to find a marker. No markers anywhere. What the hell is going on here? I need a marker. And I don't have a marker. Come on. God. Confound it. There's no markers anywhere. Does anyone use fucking markers anymore either? There. Yes. I apologize for that. Now, a local company showing some signs of trouble but Caterpillar. This is Cat. Caterpillar, first off, talk to me. High risk or low risk, sir? Yes. It's a very high risk stock. Why is it a high risk stock, ma'am? Absolutely. This is a seriously risky stock. The PE ratio is actually not that high, but always go with the beta. In this case, this stock in a well-diversified portfolio will have more than 150% of the market's volatility. So that's a whipsaw stock. Now, earnings per share is strong. They have a dividend. The dividend dollar amount is $3.44 a share. The dividend yield is that $3.44 divided by the current price. In other words, if I paid $137.38 for the stock right now, that $3.44 would represent almost a 2.5% return. So it's not guaranteed. Dividends are certainly not guaranteed. But this is actually more of an income stock because you get that dividend in it. But boy, are you taking risk with this stock. Normally, high dividend stocks tend to be lower risk because they're not plowing money back in. They're giving it to the shareholders. So in this case, this is kind of an anomalous. Now, total and return, total yield has two pieces. It has the capital gain yield, and it has the dividend yield. The capital gain yield is your gain on the stock's appreciation in price. The dividend yield is just what I told you. It's your yield on the dividend. Taken together, these represent your total expected gain, your total expected yield on the stock. In this case, we have an analyst who says that this stock is going to be worth $166.05 in exactly 1 year, which is great because we don't have to worry about annualizing. It's a 1 year right off the bat. Now, yield. An annual yield is always end over beginning minus one. Now, I'll generalize this so you can do any number of years or days later. But for the purposes for a while, I mean, this is exactly 1 year, so we would have the capital gain yield is projected. Our expected capital gain yield is $166.05, what we're projecting in 1 year, over what you pay right now for that $137.88 minus 1. Plus, well, it's actually kind of nice because they give us the dividend yield. We don't have to worry about $3.44 divided by what. It's right there for us, 2.48%. And this is Caterpillar, CAT trading symbol. Okay, so if I were to crank that out very quickly on a calculator, and always use a scientific, obviously, for this kind of work. Scientific, I would do 166. I can't even see my own writing. Thank you. 05 divided by 137.38 minus 1. So 20.87. Wow. Really? That's actually a serious projection. I mean, in a market where the market portfolio right now, our expected return to the world portfolio is definitely sliding downward. Right now, I'm a little bit lower than most. Right now, I'm saying at about 8% for beta 1. Most analysts are more around 9 to 12. But anyway, 20.87% plus 2.48%, well, that's quite healthy. So I do that times 100 to turn it into a percent, plus 2.48. So we've got a 23.35% total expected, and this is expected. It's not guaranteed. Nothing about the future is guaranteed. But we are projecting $23.05 total 1 year yield on CAT. That's significant. That's a very strong number. But of course, with greater risk, with greater expected return comes greater risk. That is one of the most fundamental principles of all of finance. The greater the expected return, the greater the risk you must bear. The greater the expected return, the greater the risk you must bear. That's just the reality of it. You are going to take a ton of risk buying CAT. With a beta of 1.57, yeah, you could come out a winner, but you could also end up very, very poor, putting all your eggs in this basket. It's a dangerous stock, but that's how you get a higher return, is by bearing that greater risk. And in this case, the risk is 157% of the market risk. And for that risk, you are expecting. You're not going to take a risk like that. That's insane risk. Unless you expect a really great return. And sure enough, CAT could give it to you. But also, CAT could plow into the ground, crash and burn. Because Caterpillar has just quiet. Well, it wasn't even quiet about it. It let the world know that it's looking for a sugar daddy, a buyer, a company or something, an entity that will buy it out and take it over. Now that scares me. You don't offer to sell yourself unless you really need money. I mean, have you ever offered to sell yourself if you didn't need money? You? It wouldn't work anyway. I mean, I tried, you know, being a male gigolo and all. It didn't work. Even on Craigslist. I wrote a country song many years ago. I put my heart on eBay and you didn't bid. It was one of my hits, along with, you should. How about, no, these are very, there was another one. The kids are ugly because of you. Anyway, where the hell was I? Okay, here we go. You can see, though, that right away you're beginning to see how markets work, and you can look at basic information that 99% of the people in the world and in this country have no idea that this information is there and this is driving their lives. Anyone who's got a pension plan, anyone who invests, anyone who has money anywhere except under a mattress is exposed to these markets, whether he or she knows it or not. And now you're beginning to see the wizards behind the curtain. By the way, let me go back to Netflix. Look at this one. Okay, very quickly. Madam, does Netflix pay a really good dividend? Oh, I got to scroll it. I'm just testing you. I wanted to see if you could see that invisible part down there. Just ear. You know what? It's early. There. Does it pay a good dividend? No. Matter of fact, how much is the dividend? Huh? It doesn't pay a dividend. In other words, Netflix, you are riding everything on the capital gain. In other words, the stock price increase. Do you see how that creates risk right in and of itself? You ain't going to get no check in the mail with this one. This one's just going to, you're just going to have to hope that that stock price goes up from where you buy it at. And goes up enough to cover your commissions as well. So in a case like this, you see that not paying a dividend constructs higher risk in a stock. Because everything rides on the company's management pushing that money at the bottom line back into the company, into plowback, to grow the company. And that in itself represents a risk. Now, madam, going back to you. You know someday you will be very old. You know, it will be past the point where Neutrogena does anything. I've been trying it, got nothing. You know, oil of Olay, nope. Lard, So when you are an old person, are you going to invest in stocks so that you can make $1 million in 20 years? No, you're going to want that dividend check or a coupon from a bond investment. You are not going to want to have companies like this in your portfolio because essentially by the, you know, you could actually make $1 million in 20 years, but you'll be dead. No, the people you named in your will, they'll honor you, but that doesn't do you any good, okay? So in other words, this is more the kind of profile stock that profiles to younger investors willing to take more risk. Now, the next thing that I would like to ask you, sir, what kind of a beta guy are you? No, give me a number. Give me a number for your beta. If you were forming a portfolio, the weighted average of the betas in the portfolio, what would you want that number to be? 0.6. Ooh. Madam, what kind of a beta woman are you? 0.25. Really? How about you? You know, it's interesting because when we profile, we do these surveys. It used to be, even two generations ago, younger investors would profile themselves with higher betas, high betas. But when we look at their actual portfolio choices, you guys are very defensive investors anymore. Essentially quite fragile. And I mean, it's just an interesting thing. Oddly though, we talk to older investors and say, what kind of betas do you want? And they'll talk about low risk. We look at their portfolios and they know so little about investing that they're actually in these portfolios with betas of 1.2, 1.6, things like that. So their betas, their portfolios actually do not match their desires, which should be for low betas. You need to take more risks in life. I mean, I do, even at my age. Well, someone says, here's a hot sauce, try it. I said, what's it called? They said, death by stupidity. Okay. I did that at Calito Chili Traders at the Mall of America. Don't ever do it. Don't. It was just so wrong what happened to me. And you know what's really irritating is people with phones videoing you, video recording you writhing in agony, the flesh falling off your face. Really? Is that all you could do is put this on YouTube? Okay. But now you're beginning to see the profile. Look, there are a lot of different things you can do in finance. And whether or not you want to be a finance major, you won't hurt my feelings if you don't want to be a finance major. But to let you know that any company you work for, people like me, My students over the past 37, 38 years will be your bosses. And they will make decisions that you don't like sometimes. And they will be in charge of the investments. When your company takes that out for your pension plan or whatever, we're the people who are going to decide where that goes. So it would be helpful if you knew what we're up to. Now, a corporation's organizational structure, there's a board of directors. They are elected by the shareholders at annual meetings. In fact, if you own stock in a company, you'll probably get what's called a proxy card, signing away, yes, you, Mr. Board of Directors, you can vote my shares and vote them for yourself. One share per vote for each of the director positions. Now, some kinds of stock have Class A and Class B, where there is this Class A that's super majority voting, like 10 votes per share. Those are for old families who started the company want to make sure that they maintain control of the company. But in normal, you will have this board of directors. They are directly elected by the shareholders, and they are the overseers of the board, of the company. They will hire the executive management. The executive management begins with the chief executive officer. And then it usually splits up. What's fun about this is within the past 5 years, this organizational chart, I'm drawing it differently from what I used to. Traditionally, you would have the chief financial officer on one side reporting to the CEO and the chief operating officer on the other side reporting to the CEO. But now there's a third position. Does anyone know what the third one is? It's just starting to show. It's just started showing up. CIO. What's the CIO? Yahtzee. Oh, I mean, these companies should have been doing this a long time before now. I mean, you've got these CEOs who are like, they think the internet is getting email and looking at lolcats. And anymore, it's gotten to be a nightmare with all of these damn hackers. It's not just technology. I mean, every week I'm seeing some new language or new trick or new way of doing things in the web. But my God, the hackers are just turning the web into a nightmare these days. These praising these morons like Anonymous and all of this and thinking that hacking is what it used to be in my time. They're in there just to create chaos, to destroy. They come from Eastern Europe. Some of the worst of the worst are Pakistan, the Netherlands. You've got these groups that we can't even identify where the hell they come from, individual rogues constantly trying to penetrate and attack. Just 2 days ago, well, no, it was yesterday, Microsoft announced that it had discovered a spear phishing attempt. A spear phishing is when you set up a site that looks like an official site, and you trick people with email into clicking there and logging in, and then you've got their passwords to penetrate the real site. Anyways, chief information officer. And then below this, and on the CFO side, the CFO has actually two sides to it. There is the accounting side, and then there's the treasury side. Now, these names can change depending upon the company. But everyone in this organization is dedicated to the task of creating value for the shareholders. In a company, make sure you understand this because this is going to be something you don't hear. You're going to hear something else in other business classes. But in a corporation, when you work in that corporation, from the bottom to the top, you have one and one goal only. That is maximization of the wealth of the shareholders. Your job, your single objective, is to maximize the wealth of the shareholders. This thing about stakeholders, is nonsense. Well, we've got to care about Mother Earth. We've got to care about the community. We've got to care about our employees. We say that, but who can fire you if you screw up and drive the stock price down? Mother Earth, the employees, your community, who fires you if you don't maximize the wealth of the shareholders? One guess. Who is it?
Board of directors.
No, the stockholders. The stockholders. They will clean you out and throw you out if you don't make their interests top in the organization. Period. There is no one else you answer to. Except the law, obviously, and that's a little dodgy. When you get to corporate crime, it's just amazing how little the law seems to care, unless you're a small fish that they can kick easily. The bottom line, though, is that the board of directors answers to the shareholders. So everyone below the board of directors answers to the shareholders. And if you don't maximize their wealth, you are out. And the problem, though, is that we've developed a new field in finance called corporate governance, because we do see problems with getting rid of the top officials, even when they screw up. There's this old boys network, as you might want to call it, where, oh, you didn't do that great this year, but we're still going to give you all these bonuses and extra stock options that you can play. Probably part of a CEO's compensation, and anyone in the executive ranks, you're going to get paid, probably too much, but you also will see stock offered to you, options. In other words, it's not stock you get right away. It's oftentimes stock that happens later, stock that you get if the price of the stock goes up, stock you get if you make the profits go up, something like that. That's good incentive. You don't want to see one of these companies where, well, we're just going to give you a huge salary and stock right off the bat. These executives don't have any incentive to do well for the corporation in that case. But anyway, that's essentially the structure within a corporate environment. Here are the different things that you can do with finance, though. Here's one called investments. You could be a stockbroker. I strongly recommend that you don't dream of that, because these are going away. This was where I was, and the jobs are just vanishing. Artificial intelligence systems and financial engineers are just overrunning the field now. My students wanted to see a real trading. They wanted to go to a brokerage house, so I took them to a boutique house. A boutique house is a house that has a limited number of clients, but they're filthy rich. So I took them up to a boutique house up in suburban Chicago. And they're going in there expecting to see this big room full of brokers. Ring, ring, hello, hello, hello. They're in this trading round part. There was one guy. He looked like Jabba the Hutt. And he was just sitting there playing some game, Candy Crush. Really? But I knew what was going on, and I was expecting this. My students come up, and they're just staring at him. Where's everyone else? They're gone. They have been gone. And they said, so how do you do your trading strategies? I don't do any trading strategies. I just let the software tell me what to do. I don't do any calculations. That's how it is. The reality is that this is a dying field. There was an advisor to one of my clubs. He wanted to take control of the club. Well, we're going to take him up to the Chicago Board of Exchange, and they'll see a real trading environment, this huge stadium. You know, you used to see in the old days, the screaming and the yelling and all that kind of stuff. And I said, okay, you want to take him up there. We trotted up 70 students, something like that. Well, they went down this long hallway, and they were stopped by the tour guide, and he was telling them about open cry, the hand signals, and how you do things. And then we walked out into the pits, all these different islands. There was nothing. There was only one pit that was trading. That's the options pit, because computers can't figure out what those crazy mofos do. But other than that, there were a few people sitting in the stadium seating. They were traders, but they were surfing, they were on Facebook, or they were playing World of Warcraft, or they were surfing for naughty stuff on YouTube. There wasn't anything going on. It's all computerized now. Like I said, the only pit that was trading was this options pit, and that's because those people make options that are so confusing even computers can't figure out what they're doing yet. Investments is disappearing. Well, I want to work in the back room. No, you don't. You're going to work in the front room doing sales, period. Learn how to be a salesperson. If you can't be a salesperson, don't even try this. Another one that is very big. This one is big. Corporate finance. This is those guys right there, corporate finance. You're managing, you're deciding whether projects are go or no go. You're figuring out what to do with money that comes in, how to manage cash. You're figuring out what to do when you need large capital investments. In other words, capital markets would be the long-term money you need for long-term projects. The money markets would be the short-term markets. For example, there's a company here in town. It's very large. Most people have never even heard of it, but it's a very quiet, big, huge gorilla that I know this one group, they manage the cash that comes in for short-term investments until they have to pay the money out to someone else. And then there's this other group. I know one person, the head of that one, he handles the capital markets. In other words, where do we get money that we need that's going to go into long-term projects? Those are the capital market people. Both sides of it are actually pretty interesting because you're trading. You are a trader, literally. And then there is a couple of others, because this is an agriculture company, they deal in brokering commodities. Okay, we've got all these farmers, and they've got this corn this year. We've got to figure out how to manage the corn that they've got, get it to the best price for them, manage their accounts so that when in bad years, they don't go bankrupt. In good years, we take the excess to protect them from in the bad years, all that. That's corporate finance. It's all kinds of interesting stuff. Then there is institutional. Institutional, you might think of as banks. Institutional, working in banks. But there are so many different kinds of banks, and I'll cover that later in the course. I mean, people think of a bank as a bank. There are many different kinds, and the only ones you ever see are the ones that you put money into, write checks on, but there are very big other banks, and they all fall under that. Institutional. The problem with this is that they're going to look at you one first right off the bat, and they're going to say you're a teller. And you got to claw your way up from there, and that is really grueling. You have to get in above that position and also get in above loan officer, because they're going to try to slot you there. And then you'll basically, if you're a loan officer, you'll eventually kill yourself. And then insurance and risk management. We have one of the top schools in the nation in insurance and risk management. This field, over the next 5 years, we project 500,000 jobs. Why? Because all these monster insurance companies hired all these people in the 60s and 70s, and then they thought, well, we're good, and now all those people are getting old, gray hair, dying of heart attacks, and they don't have replacements. So the insurance industry, especially commercial insurance, which is nothing like selling auto insurance to mom and dad, there is a huge market, and they are pouring money into the best schools like this one, taking care of the people who want to major in insurance and risk management. Then there's real estate finance. And I'm not talking about selling mom and dad's home. I'm talking about shopping malls, condo developments, skyscrapers, doing the financial analysis, making the deal, bringing the rain. By the way, the term rainmaker, that's someone who brings money in from investors. That was one of the things that I wasn't a rainmaker. I worked with the rainmakers. I did the math to know how to tell the rainmakers how much we needed. There are a couple of other fields too. One that is just entertainment finance. I'm not talking about streams of money or rivers of money or lakes of money. I'm talking about oceans of money. Literal oceans. The largest single industry on earth. That money. I took my students about 4 years ago up to the finance jockeys at the White Sox. And it just blows you away how complex the entertainment industry is. All of its nuances, from music to movies. And in movies, you've got the main run, you've got the indies, you've got in music, you've got all this. It's all there. And there are very few people positioned to do this. And that includes sports. So if you're interested in any of this, talk to me in my office. Bring snacks. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.